Samuel 18. After David had finished talking with Saul, Jonathan became one in spirit with David, and he loved him as himself. From that day, Saul kept David with him and did not let him return home to his family. And Jonathan made a covenant with David because he loved him as himself. Jonathan took off the robe he was wearing and gave it to David, along with his tunic, and even his sword, and his bow, and his belt. Whatever mission Saul sent him on, David was so successful that Saul gave him a high rank in the army. This pleased all the troops and Saul's officers as well. When the men were returning home, after David had killed the Philistine, the women came out from all the towns of Israel to meet King Saul with singing and dancing and joyful songs, and with timbrels and lyres. As they danced, they sang, "Saul has slain his thousands, and David his tens of thousands." Uh-oh. Saul was very angry. This refrain displeased him greatly. They had credited David with tens of thousands, he thought, but me with only thousands. What more can you get but the kingdom? That's up, buddy. And from that time on, Saul kept a close eye on David. The next day, an evil spirit from God came forcefully on Saul. He was prophesying in his house while David was playing the lyre, as he usually did. And as he usually did, Saul had a spear in his hand, and he hurled it, saying to himself, "I'll pin David to the wall." But David eluded him twice. Saul was afraid of David because the Lord was with David but had departed from Saul. So he sent David away from him and gave him command over 1,000 men, and David led the troops in their campaign. In everything he did, he had great success because the Lord was with him. When Saul saw how successful he was afraid of him, but all Israel and Judah loved David because he led them in their campaigns. Saul said to David, "Here is my older daughter Merab. I will give her to you in marriage. Only serve me bravely and fight the battles of the Lord." For Saul said to himself, "I will not raise a hand against him. Let the Philistines do that." But David said to Saul, "Who am I, and what is my family or my clan in Israel that I should become the king's son-in-law?" So when the time came for Merab, Saul's daughter, to be given to David, she was given in marriage to Adriel of Meholah. Now Saul's daughter Michal was in love with David, and when they told Saul about it, he was pleased. "I will give her to him," he thought, "so that she may be a snare to him, and so that the hand of the Philistines may be against him." So Saul said to David, "Now you have a second opportunity to become my son-in-law." Then Saul ordered his attendants, "Speak to David privately and say, 'Look, the king likes you, and his attendants all love you, but now become his son-in-law.'" They repeated these words to David, but David said, "Do you think it is a small matter to become the king's son-in-law? I'm only a poor man and little known." When Saul's servants told him what David had said, Saul replied, "Say to David, the king wants no other price for the bride than 100 Philistine foreskins to take revenge on his enemy." Saul's plan was to have David fall by the hands of the Philistines. When the attendants told David these things, he was pleased to become the king's son-in-law. So before the allotted time elapsed, David took his men with him and went out and killed 200 Philistines and brought back their foreskins. So they counted out the full number to the king so that David might become the king's son-in-law. Then Saul gave his daughter Michal in marriage. And Saul realized that the Lord was with David, and that his daughter Michal still loved David. Saul became still more afraid of him, and he remained his enemy for the rest of his days. The Philistine commanders continued to go out to battle. As often as they did, David met with more success than the rest of Saul's officers, and his name became well known.
Species, it's like we're the only species that's hardwired to self-destruct. We come up with reasons to avoid godly people, and we come up with reasons to associate with people who are not so godly. And so Paul says, don't be misled. It's easy to be misled. Bad company corrupts good character. And I think, although, like I said earlier, most likely you're not tempted to kill the godly people in your life. I'm sure there's exceptions, but most likely you're not tempted in that way. But I think that, like Saul, our insecurities can get in the way of friendships with godly people, just like they did with Saul. Saul was so focused on being king because he found his identity in being king. He was insecure about who he was, and as a result, he missed out on what could have been a great friendship. He missed out on what could have been a great friendship with David because he was so insecure, so focused on remaining king so he could feel good about himself. In the same way, when I look at my life, I see how my insecurities have kind of led me away from godly friendships. When I was in high school, for instance, there was a group of Christian guys who loved to hang out with each other, and I was a Christian, and I wasn't interested really in partying or anything, but for some reason, I always gravitated towards the pot smokers and the skateboarders and the people who were dropping acid and getting in fights and going to parties. Those were the people that I hung out with, and I felt more comfortable with them, and I never really questioned why. I just thought they were cooler. And even though I wasn't doing most of those things, I felt more comfortable around them. And as I've gotten older, I've looked back on that time and realized that the reason I did is that I was terrified of rejection. I was terrified that the more godly people, the people who were explicit about wanting to follow in Jesus, I was scared that they would reject me. Or I was, that's what it really was more about then, is that I was scared of being rejected, and that maybe I would feel like I was not as good. And as I've gotten older, I've kind of noticed this trend to where sometimes I'll avoid developing friendships with really godly people or people who I perceive to be godly, because, you know, we can only guess up to a certain point. Because I feel better about myself around them, you know? Doesn't that sound sick and twisted? Like, if you've ever, I don't know if you guys have drinking buddies or if you've ever had drinking buddies, but they can be a really bad influence, which is why George Thorogood always drinks alone. Because yeah. Drinking buddies can be such a bad influence. He's a godly guy, that guy. But you know, there's always somebody who's got it worse than you, right? You don't know which one it is, but there's always somebody who's more of a drunk than you are, and so you can always sort of feel good about yourself. Or maybe that's not your bent, but if you've ever been around a group of friends who they weren't really following God closely, you felt comfortable around them maybe, but not for the right reasons. You felt comfortable around them perhaps because they weren't challenging you. They weren't challenging you to behave in a certain way. In fact, you felt like perhaps you were living your life better than them. And so you were never uncomfortable in that way. And I think that's part of how sometimes our insecurities can prevent us from developing friendships with godly people. Or maybe you're more like of the pastorly bent. Maybe you really like to minister to people who are hurting. And that's a good thing. It's a good, good thing. But maybe you spend a lot of your time ministering to people who you feel really need you, partially because you really love them, but also because maybe you feel a little bit better about yourself when you're doing it, because they're more screwed up than you are, right? And they need you, right? And that kind of makes you feel good. And so and there was definitely a time in my life where I was doing a lot of ministry, and I was really gravitating towards people who were hurting and I'm really messed up. And I think part of it was I didn't want to be around anybody who really had it together more than me, because that would make me feel less than. So I'd go hang out with people who I felt were really screwed up, so I'd feel better. I mean, am I the only one who's this insecure? I don't know. I doubt it. I heard somebody say once that when you have bad self-esteem, when you're insecure, when you're meeting somebody for the first time, your first subconscious question is, am I better than or less than this person? Am I better than or less than this person? And it was this podcast on codependency. And what the speaker said, she said, instead of thinking like that, instead of thinking about, you know, am I better than this person? Am I less than this person? Think about, what do I have in common with this person? Start thinking about that. And I thought that was really helpful, but that's really neither here nor there, because what I really wanted to talk about this morning was, if our goal is to become like Jesus, we'll pursue friendships with godly people. And I just wanted to spend some time talking about how our insecurities can get in the way of that, because it's so important that we spend time with godly people. In fact, I think that if our mission in life is to become like Jesus, we will develop friendships with godly people and spend time with them. The proverb says that, you know, as iron sharpens iron, so we sharpen one another. We will become, I really love this quote, I'm just going to read it again, you're the average of the five people you spend the most time with. And so when I think about, like, the five people I spend the most time with, is that who I want to be? So this is going to be a short sermon this morning. So I really had two main applications for you. The first thing I wanted to say, or first application of the sermon that I wanted to encourage us all to do, is I want us to all evaluate our friendships. We all have family people who, you know, we have to spend time with. And we all have coworkers who we have to spend time with. You know, that's just part of life. But I kind of want you to evaluate, aside from family and aside from coworkers, who are the people that you spend the most time with? Who are your friends? And how do you feel around them? Do you look up to them? Or do you think that they are a godly influence on you? Is part of the purpose of the friendship to become more like Jesus? Or is it a kind of a friendship where Jesus and God really isn't discussed, not really a part of it? Another question is, you know, is this person a good influence on you? What do you do together? Is this benefiting you, or is it dragging you down? Is it a friendship that is inspired more by your love? Is it a friendship more inspired by your desire to become more like Jesus and serve in God's kingdom? Or is it a friendship that's more inspired by insecurity or laziness or whatever? I don't mean to spoil friendship completely, but I think that these are really important questions because our lives are supposed to be about serving God and not something else. The last thing I wanted to encourage you to do is I want you to try to spend some time with somebody who you perceive to be a godly person. Like I said, you can only guess, you know, like who's godly, who's not, who is somebody behind closed doors. But as you spend time in community, you know, you get to know people. And the more you get to know people, the more hopefully you're going to meet somebody or multiple somebodies who has the kind of relationship with God that you want for yourself. I know there are a few people in my life who, like when I'm around them and I hear about their relationship with God, I want something like that, and I want to be like them. That's another good friendship test to think about when you're deciding which friend to spend time with. Do you want to be like that person? Not are they better than or less than, but do you want to be like them? Would you be happy if you behaved as they behaved? Would your loved ones be happy if you behave the way they behave? And so I was thinking about like giving this list of godly character, but that sounds extremely boring. So I wanted to talk about somebody in my life. There are multiple somebodies in my life who are really godly and who, you know, have things about their lives that, you know, I want to be like them. I want to be more like them. But I wanted to talk about one in particular today, and he's not paying me. I wanted to talk about Steve. I've gotten to know Steve, you know, a lot over the past 2 or 3 years. He gave me permission to do this. It was really fun asking him. And the more I'm around Steve, truthfully, the more I want to be like him. I know I'm really kissing up right now, Steve. Just deal with it, buddy. What I see in Steve, and this is what makes me want to be like him and spend time with him, is that he humbly strives to obey God with his life. That's what his life is about. And I see the striving. Steve is the first person to admit when he makes a mistake, when he does something that he feels is wrong, that he thinks God says is wrong. He admits it and strives to do better. It's not that he doesn't present himself as this perfect little Christian. He presents himself as somebody who is struggling with all of his might to obey God, failing, but getting back up again, accepting God's forgiveness and moving on. And his focus is on obeying God. And that's who I want to be when I'm in my 70s, but look like I'm 45. You know, that's like Steve. That's who I want to be. He makes a conscious effort to share the gospel when he has opportunities. He struggles with fear, like we all do when we have the opportunity and feel the obligation to share the gospel. He struggles with that, but he pushes himself to do it. It's on his mind. He's thinking about the kingdom. He's thinking about the kingdom. He is devoted to prayer. He's devoted to reading the Bible, even though he struggles with doubts and admits those doubts freely. For me, just for me, I'm like this huge ocean of doubt. You get to know me, you're going to feel really lifted up because I just am full of doubt. I assure you, nobody's got me on their list. If you do, I feel sorry for you. You are screwed. No, just, I'm sorry, that was too much. He really pursues that time of prayer and Bible study in a humble way that for me is refreshing. Don't worry, Steve, I'm almost done. You're turning red yet? I think probably the most challenging thing for me is how Steve approaches his marriage. He approaches his marriage as a ministry. He loves you, Barb, and he tries to minister to his wife better every day, every week, really approaching it as a ministry of love. He just really has his priorities straight, and that's the kind of guy I want to be. When I'm in my 70s, that's who I want to be. So find somebody like that. That's my encouragement to you. Sometime this week. Oh, and just one quick thing. I know that there are probably some of us here who don't have a lot of friends. Maybe we don't feel like we have time, or maybe we feel like life is just BS anyway, so why take the time? I just want to encourage you to evaluate how you're spending your time. It is amazing how much extra time and energy we have. We turn off the phone, turn off the TV, get rid of Netflix, just for a week. It is amazing. You don't realize it at the time. You have more time than you think you do. I know there's exceptions. People with 4, 6, 7, 10 kids. I know there's exceptions to this rule. I'm not trying to be too legalistic here. For most of us, we have more time than we think. And so I want to encourage you to take some time this week, over the next couple weeks, think about some godly people in your life who you want to be like, you want to emulate. Reach out to them. Spend time with them. Let your drinking buddies find some new drinking buddies. And really pursue Christ in that way. So I want to pray for us all. God, I want to thank you for the breath that is in my lungs. I want to thank you for this beautiful day that you've made. We only exist because of you. We only exist because you created us and you sustain us. I pray that you will help us remember that we are supposed to be servants. I pray that you will heal our relationships. I pray that you will help us to connect to people who will point us to you, so that when we are around those who don't know you, we can actually be of some benefit to them. I want to pray this in Jesus' name. Amen.
Five minutes or